Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Kevin Brown, KIPP's Fellow, Vice President of Information Technology for NMAX Corporation, and Chair of the CIO Council for the Conference Board of Canada. Kevin, with your long history of notable leadership, business, and technology successes, we are indeed fortunate to have you do this interview. Thank you for sharing your deep knowledge and experiences with our audience.
Well, you're welcome, Stephen. I'm very happy to do that. I should clarify right up front that I just actually concluded my term as the chair of the Conference Board Council of CIOs, although obviously I am serving as past chair.
So while you were chair, or you were serving in that capacity with the Conference Board, what were your key priorities, and do you see these key priorities still continuing on today?
Well, the key priorities, obviously, of the Conference Board Council of CIOs is really to, if you like, serve as a medium for our members for them to exchange experiences, knowledge, and ideas related to information technology and clearly information management. We also like to challenge our members to a higher level of thinking through our discussions, through the use of knowledge cafes, to really address new knowledge areas and strategic issues that concern our corporations, our government institutions, as they relate to the practice of information technology and information management. And then to a lesser capacity, to serve as a sounding board for any research initiatives that the conference board may undertake in the area of information technology. And so I don't think our focus has changed. We've got a great membership that come right across the country, and typically have meetings that are in, you know, the 20 to 35 attendees for each meeting. We meet three times a year. So we've built a tremendous network amongst the participating CIOs.
So what do you see as the current challenges to business that you want to address?
Well, obviously there are many, but I think the three that we've typically been dealing with over the last couple of years while I've been chair probably are in three areas. The overall contribution of information technology organization to organizational strategy, whether that's a government institution, a not-for-profit organization, or clearly for business. A significant challenge, I think, for all of us to continue to push our organizations to make significant contributions to those organizations that we're part of. Second area is in the whole area of critical thinking that I think our organizations have come to expect and or even demand from their IT leaders of their organizations. We're no longer at the table, the executive table, to merely represent IT. We're there to understand the business, to look for areas and opportunities in which the business can enhance and contribute to the strategy of our organization. So this whole art of critical thinking becomes pretty important for these CIOs. And then I think the third area that we've been spending a tremendous amount of time in, fairly similar to the Canadian Information Processing Society as an organization, is in this, the challenges that we're seeing from the changes in our workplace. Changes in that we've got an aging workforce across the nation. We certainly have the challenges of attracting youth into our field. And I think increasingly now, sort of the additional changes that we have of having a very diverse workforce. We're not that different than human resources function in our corporations. Both of us have real challenges with regards to that diverse workforce, diverse in terms of diversity, but also in terms of skill and in terms of age. It's quite a different workforce that we're now managing, I think. And so those are significant challenges we face.
Well, I know, Kevin, the last time we talked, you mentioned about bringing in a speaker who talked about Gen Y, and then you, as a result, invoked some programs to work with you. Can you describe that, some of those programs, specific programs, and what your data is indicating and how you plan to invoke change?
Well, I think so. We did bring in, you're right, for a couple of our sessions. We dealt with a number of people to help us better understand the challenges that are coming towards us as it relates to youth and attracting youth, retaining youth into our industry. And what we actually concluded, we had quite the input from KIPPS, from ITAC, from educational institutions that were represented. What we concluded was, as CIOs, that really the challenge that we faced was in our own locale, and that as chief information officers, we were best positioned to make a contribution locally and to channel that contribution either in our own offices, where we would look to host sessions in our organizations that brought parents and students together into companies to talk about just in our own companies alone, the tremendous diversity of roles and jobs that there are that deal with information management, information technology. I think way more than most people. You know, most people might just have this view you're talking about a programmer or somebody that creates games. And clearly, most of the jobs now in any enterprise or municipality or not-for-profit organization involved to some degree working in the areas of information technology or knowledge of information technology, information management. So we could see ourselves contributing CIOs right in our own organization to further that understanding. But also working in community, I know KIPPS in Edmonton and part of a broader initiative up in the Edmonton area are looking to really attempt to try to address some of the challenges of attracting youth into our field. So whether that's CIOs going out and speaking to schools or participating in a broader collaborative efforts where we bring attention to the tremendous opportunities that our industry affords young people, that was in our mind the best way that we could impact, have an impact in our local communities. So, I mean, I think we're all collectively dealing with clearly a reduced enrollment that we're seeing right across North America for sure. I think we have to deal with the fact that we probably don't know how to inspire youth into careers. It's one thing to give them information. It's another one to inspire them. You know, what does the IT profession and IT recruiters and organizations that engage IT people with an IT background, what do we need to do and should we be doing to really inspire and create a inspirational messages that are based obviously on integrity and fact that would cause young people to choose maybe not a career but to choose an early job in the IT field. And then I think really all of us have an obligation to talk about the impact that information technologies are having on society as a whole. And I think many of our organizations like KIPPS have a lot they could do to bring an external view to that, to a broader audience than just IT professionals, about the tremendous impact that information-related technologies are having on quality of life in Canada.
Now, something that struck me was you talk about some U.S. legislation bringing accountability to IT managers. Can you provide more information on that and what this means to us here in Canada?
Well, probably not any one specific legislation. I know that was a conversation that we had quite some time ago, and a little bit of that's probably escaped me now. But, I mean, I think what we're seeing, though, is, you know, with the whole issues around Sarbanes-Oxley compliance, regulatory legislation, privacy legislation, clearly the CIO has a major role to play in their organizations, the head of IT, with regards to each one of those areas. And whether that's being held accountable by legislative offices, by regulatory boards, by government privacy offices, increasingly that CIO is being brought into those discussions to demonstrate that they're providing the kind of leadership and direction to their organizations to be in compliance in those various areas. And I think increasingly obviously our boards of corporations are becoming much more aware of how important the CIO is as one of those, if you like, critical legs on a stool that are necessary to ensure compliance. So along with legal, along with HR, along with executive management in the corporation, the CIOs look to be aware of any legislation, to be aware of any regulation, and then to be bringing forward the things that he or she feels their organization needs to do to be in compliance. It is a big challenge for us. It's not, you know, we'd love to see it as a cookbook where you just get all these instructions and that's what you do. But in much of this legislation and regulation, there's lots of room for latitude and for you to really understand the risk your organization, the risk profile your organization is willing to adopt, and then to manage within those bounds in regards to regulation. So I think quite a challenge for heads of IT now.
Kevin, you bring an incredible history of successes over a long period of time and over a sustained career. Can you profile how you got to your present position and what your current role entails?
Wow. I mean, typically, I think at my age, people don't want to talk about their history because it's historical now. But I could, for sure. I started my career here in Calgary. I actually attended college here in Calgary and took programming. And at the time, I recall, I had no idea, you know, back in the early 70s, that there was multiple types of programming courses. So I had actually enrolled in a scientific-based programming two-year program at SAIT here in Calgary, the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology. And by the end of my first year, while I had outstanding marks in math, I did not have outstanding marks in calculus, I can assure you. And I began to find that I was just having to spend way, way too much of my time and energy to try to make the grade in calculus and analytical geometry, subjects that weren't really dear to my heart, that's for sure. And I began to see that was really impacting my programming, which I actually was excelling at in the first year. And over the course of the summer, I just happened to see a job in the World Bank for a computer operator, and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do with a career, probably like a lot of young people today, but I decided to apply for that, and I got the job. And boy, back in those days in the 70s, as many of my friends will remember, I think we were getting promoted every 6 months if you could kind of spell your name right. There was just tremendous opportunities to move ahead in your field, and I was very fortunate and did that quite a bit. And I worked for the World Bank for 8 years, culminated my experience with the World Bank in the last 2 years in Montreal in online banking. I recall, for me, I had the first experience of testing out ATMs, automatic teller machines, in Montreal. And I can remember thinking to myself, boy, these things will never fly. So you wouldn't want to predict the future based on me. And I ended my career at the time with the Royal Bank, then in the whole area of telecommunications. Obviously, the banks with their online banking systems really had to install massive networks across the country to begin to support ATMs, and so I was fortunate enough to get exposed to that whole area. And then, as it would turn out, my wife and I decided to move back to Alberta, to Edmonton, even though I was lived in Calgary all my life prior to going to Montreal. And we joined a company at the time called Canadian Utilities, now known as ATCO. And really, my career really took off there, more into management in the area of telecommunications, then into data processing management, and then in this whole area of end-user computing. So I've had a lot of firsts in my career. And I can remember when I was given that responsibility thinking, well, you know, these PCs, these personal PCs, they're never going to fly. And so with some humor, I took on that rather reluctantly, as long as I got to keep my telecommunication responsibilities as well. And so I did that. And then we entered in the whole area of time sharing. And then I got very actively involved in distributed computing and began to see that was going to take on quite a life of itself. And I guess by that time, I'd been with Canadian Utilities. Over the course of management, became responsible for architecture as well in that shop. And by that time, I really was starting to look much more at spreading my wings and getting responsibility for the whole IT organization. And sort of in the mid-90s, EPCOR came calling, another utility and owned by the city of Edmonton, and gave me my first opportunity to become a CIO. And I certainly fulfilled that role with EPCOR for 11 years, and just a great, great opportunity, great company, learned a ton, maybe even at their expense, but it was just a great, great experience for me. And then in 2005, I took a move to come to Calgary, back to Calgary, with my wife to our roots, and to head up NMAX Corporation, owned by the City of Calgary, another utility company, as CIO here, which is where I find myself today. And so that has been just great. And through all these years, I guess in the late 80s, I got very active in KIPPS, thanks to a mentor of mine, Hugh Kelly, who was the director at the time at Canadian Utilities. And then before I knew it, I was, I'd run large conferences in Edmonton, attracting over 1,000 attendees, making lots of money, which was a good thing for a not-profit organization. And then became president of KIPPS Edmonton, and then had the great opportunity to serve nationally and become national president of KIPPS. And so I've had, I've just had great opportunities in my career to serve in the IT industry and to network with people and see the great opportunities that organizations like KIPPS, through their tremendous networking ability, affords affords practitioners. So that's sort of my career to date.
You know, with your, just incredible history, and as I mentioned, the many successes you have, you bring a unique perspective to the marketplace. So can you share your views on the top challenges facing business or industry, government, and education in 2008 and beyond?
Well, you're going back to my ability as a seer, which might be dangerous, but I see a number of challenges, and I don't think they're all that different, being very networked with other CIOs, both nationally and, of course, here in Calgary as well. I would say I think we have a real challenge, I think, in driving business change, in supporting business agility, not just in business but in government. Clearly, both organizations have an immense need to do more with less, to involve their customers and their partners in their delivery chain. So that I think it comes back to the sort of the core contribution that an IT organization can contribute, or information technology can contribute towards, and that's business agility, business change, business adaptability. These are the areas where IT can make tremendous contributions, and so I think that's a huge challenge for us. I think another area, of course, is this future skill shortages, and maybe not just skill shortages, just shortages. So I think, that has an impact on the IT organization, but that has an impact, this whole issue of aging workforce. I think all of our industries are talking about it, but I'd say we're probably in the mere infancy of actually dealing with it. It's a tremendous issue that gets closer and closer to us when we think about aging workforce. And, of course, the young people entering the workforce, they're not necessarily choosing information technology. So that in itself presents tremendous challenges for the IT organization. You know, we're having to think about onshoring and offshoring to look for critical skills. We're having to think much more now about how we're going to engage the workforce that we have, not just in the locations that we traditionally expect to engage them, which is obviously the office. I think an emerging issue I see right now, which I think could just emerge as a number one issue for IT organizations very quickly, is the impact of the cost of gasoline. I think we could see that have such a groundswell of impact in terms of causing workers to almost begin to demand to be able to work from home. You know, I'm sorry if you as an organization haven't figured out the whole telecommuting issue and how you're going to deal with this, but I just can't afford to come to work. And if you can't offer me that opportunity, there's probably other organizations that would be more than happy to offer me that opportunity. So I think, the skill shortage is this whole ability to deal with our workforce not just the changes in the workforce, but the changes that are impacting our workforce is going to be a huge concern for us as CIOs. CIOs and HR departments, I think they're like, they got to be big partners in this, in that challenge. And I guess if I was pick a third one, there's so many you could go to, I would probably think of the impact that I believe and our National Council of CIOs have been spending a lot of time in this subject, is this whole area of social networking and the impact that I think that's having on collaboration in a workforce, which, by the way, I think is a huge positive. But I do believe there's a lot of organizations and HR departments as well, in addition to IT, that just aren't sure where this is going to go and are wondering whether it's a, you know, it's a diversion and whether people will actually do less work as a result of it. I'm firmly in the camp that this is a new way of working, that young people are inordinately networked, way more than we give them credit for. And, you know, I think of networks in the traditional sense of my age, I guess in my 50s, about, you know, getting out, meeting people and physically getting together and going to conferences together or going out to education sessions together. And, of course, young people do that too, but so much more, they do so much more in live networked sessions where they're in constant communication. And, I think they're going to redefine the way work gets done and the way networks operate, and they're going to bring what was very much a social pastime into the workplace with huge expectations. And so I really believe that as heads of IT, we have to understand that challenge and we have to be experiencing it so that we do understand it. So those would be three areas that I think require a lot of time from our IT leadership.
So it's interesting. You talk about sort of this whole idea of business and business agility, and then the skills area, like a skills gap or shortage, and then social networking, which again ties into, I guess, Generation Y or the millennials, mm-hmm. this group born post 1980. Did you ever have an opportunity to bring in Don Tapscott at all into your forum or to listen to some of the research that he's done, you know, with Wikonomics and?
Well, I've heard Don speak. I've had Don come and speak way, way back in the 90s, late 90s, a lot. So I might be Don Tapscott out, and I say that respectfully. He's done great work. But I haven't lately. We've spent a little bit more time with sort of youth that are leading, you know, thinkers in this whole area of young people and what works to attract young people. I mean, I'm trying to think of some names off the top of my head, and I'm not at the moment. But, some of these organizations, I'm sorry, it's not coming to my mind. I think they just bring a really fresh perspective. You know, listen to a young person. You can actually talk to any young person in your own organization and ask them how they've experienced onboarding in your company. How did they feel they were oriented to get them up and running and productive quickly? It is amazing what they will reveal for you that your organization perhaps could and should be doing to get them more engaged quicker so that they can begin contributing quicker than we might be used to. And so, you know, I think I'm not so sure we need dynamic speakers coming in to talk to us as much as we need to just get out ourselves and talk to the people that have most recently joined our organization to discover, you know, what they're experiencing and the suggestions that they might have. You know, these young people, of course, now move around a lot. And so they bring you a lot of perspectives that normally when you hire somebody, they might, you know, in my day, I might have talked to you about my previous one job and my previous experience in that company. Today, somebody in their late 20s, they might talk to you about the last 10 places they worked and what, you know, what excited them about one and didn't excite them about another. So I think that's where we could spend a lot of our time and get a lot of value for it.
You know, earlier in our discussion, you mentioned your many roles within KIPPS, both in Edmonton and at the national level, leading this organization, which has a unique position in that they're Canada's representative on the International Federation, which is a UN-founded body. So Again, because you have this incredible history both in business and outside of business and trade organizations such as KIPPS, what role do you see KIPPS playing in the broader community, such as in business and industry, government, and education internationally in the future?
Well, I'll certainly give you my opinions. I'm never short on those. But I do believe strongly for KIPPS, particularly, that probably the best answer to that question would come from KIPPS talking to people like Jennifer Cario and, young people that have been out working with other young people to hear, what it is they're looking for to contribute to their careers. Coming from my experience, I can only look back on what I think KIPPS afforded me, and I have a lot of young people that work for me in my IT organization here at NMAX, and I actually don't see the needs changing that greatly. So one of the areas that I think KIPPS excels at is bringing practitioners together, and therefore, I call that networking. Bringing them together to share experiences, to relate to other people that not only that practice IT, but also to relate to the very many different disciplines there are in IT. And so I think that's a critical role that KIPPS plays. If I have a challenge that I see in when I move to new organizations, typically I see it in the people that are in their late 40s and 50s. They're extraordinarily networked. When they're challenged, they pick up the phone and call somebody to go, how are you dealing with it? What did you do when you had that problem? When I think of youth and I think of myself, we all, when you're youth, you're still trying to prove your way. You're much more likely to want to solve a problem all by yourself. You're going to see that as a weakness to pick up the phone and ask other people how they're approaching it. And so I think that's a vital role that I think KIPPS plays in this whole area of networking. Clearly, I think the other huge strength that KIPPS has is their educational offerings that they either put forward or facilitate. I think KIPPS has and continues to have a huge responsibility to educate or to facilitate educating and raising the knowledge of the workforce in information technology. And so I think it's a real value that members perceive from KIPPS. But I have to say, to those two, I think equally important to KIPPS, in my view, in my experience too, has been, KIPPS is only important when they're doing things beyond their borders. If their only focus is serving their members, it becomes, that internal focus becomes, I think it begins to limit the organization because, to me, when you tell somebody you're a member of KIPPS, if the first thing they have to ask is, what is that? That's a huge signal that you must not be contributing enough to society or they know what it is. And so I think KIPPS is always going to be challenged to look for, and I know they are doing this today, is to continue to look for ways in their community where they exist that they can make a contribution back into the community, whether that's raising the awareness of the role that information technology plays or raising the need for professionalism in the industry or actually just meeting the needs that some part of the local community might have. Could be computers in schools. It could be many, many, many things. It could be technology awareness symposiums, but some way in which they can serve the local community. I think that once you start serving more than yourself, you start to be of significance to a broader audience. So I think that's where I would continue to urge KIPPS to have a very balanced inward and outward focus. Those would be my comments, I guess, about KIPPS.
So it sounds like you're a really strong supporter in outreach, just reaching out to different communities and making those connections, because that's how you create, passion and energy and provide value to many, many, to the broader public as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I have been a huge supporter of the professionalism efforts of KIPPS, and I continue to be a supporter. I'm probably not as as passionate about it as I have been in the past. But that only comes from, I guess, the increasing recognition on my part that that I still believe governments and at all levels and business at for the very large corporations, especially if they're IT corporations, so we could all think of a lot of three-letter companies that would fit that mold. I think most of these corporations are still a little bit uncommitted as to whether there's a grave need for professionalism in IT, and whether that's a professional designation. Obviously, I value that. I think it all makes us feel good about ourselves, which is important, and it makes us understand the responsibility that we carry when we practice our field of practice for our businesses or for government or for not-for-profit institutions. I think we do need to look to those organizations to lead and to have a rallying cry. I do believe that there are countries in the world that clearly have got that. I mean, if I look at the educational investment that countries like India have made to really come out of nowhere to move and advance information technology and educate the workforce and to have credentials and to think about ISO, I think Canada needs to develop that same sense of urgency because we are an information generation. I mean, I think I recall seeing watching on TV just a few weeks ago that for the first time ever, the number of jobs in the retail and information, if you like, industry have overtaken the manufacturing industry. That's a telling statistic, which I think should be calling governments and business to the realization of how important information technology practitioners and professionals are going to be to the future wealth generation of our country. So, I certainly encourage KIPPS to continue to push that forward, but particularly at the corporate and government level. And it's a daunting task, and one I really salute KIPPS for taking leadership in.
So there's this International Federation for Information Processing Professional Practice Partnership Program, sometimes referred to as IP3, which is this global initiative to launch this whole idea of a code of ethics and global standards and a common body of knowledge and so forth and professional certification, again, all happening on a global scale. What are your views on that?
Well, I guess I have two views, and they're mixed. One is I applaud the efforts. IFIPS existed for a lot of years, almost all my IT, all the time that I practiced IT, and KIPPS would be pretty much the same. So I continue to applaud their efforts, and I think they need to continue to do that. But I do believe that equally as important is to find some very short-term way in which to offer value into the industry at the level of that the small business can recognize, or even large business. And I guess I have to say I go to organizations like PMI, the PMI Institute, with their project management designation. I don't think there's an organization, I can't believe there's an organization in North America that doesn't get that, that doesn't go, boy, I don't know if that's a professional certification, but I know one thing, if someone has that, I want to hire a project manager that has that designation, probably over one that doesn't. Unless when I interview them, it's very clear that designation or not, that they're not someone I'd want to hire. But if they're pretty much on balance, I'm much more likely to interview people that have that designation because it tells me they've made a commitment to a body of knowledge. It's a fairly tight body of knowledge, and I recognize it, and I can see how my business would use it. And for me, I believe KIPPS would continue to get short-term advantage out of finding a way, and I'm not saying they're not, of linking to those designations. There's a big movement afoot, and I don't know where it is, to create a designation for business analysts. And I know organizations are struggling to identify what should a business analyst know, what can you expect them to produce, and if there was a similar designation, maybe perhaps there is. I mean, again, I think KIPP's continuing to put those designations forward, and perhaps finding a way that those designations can be brought in directly into these professional designations. I just think that is an easier message for businesses to understand and relate to, particularly they don't, you know, they're not part of that big picture. They just know, I got this problem, I'm busy with all the rest of my life, but I know if I'm going to hire a project manager, but it'd be great if they had a PM, you know, PMI designation. So I'd like to see KIPPs continue to really push that message, and I'm not as clear as to whether they are or aren't, but I think that's very important.
Well, it sounds like you're very much in support of things like delivering value to business, ensuring outreach to different communities, to different organizations, and to also support inclusion as some key sort of messages and tactics going forward.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
You know, Kevin, you have, again, undertaken many leadership roles, and what sort of two qualities do you think that you found to be most useful to you as one of the key leaders in this country, but also recognized internationally for just all the accomplishments you've done over the years?
Well, wow, that's an introspective question. Well, I guess the first thing that comes to mind that I like to pride myself in, and that is, you know, really having a passion for our industry and for what it can contribute. And there's no doubt, like any one of our practices, whether you're an accountant or an HR professional or an IT practitioner, we certainly don't always hit home runs. But I have a great passion for what I believe information practitioners can bring to their business and to their community, whether it's in a volunteer, you know, capacity or a work capacity or a professional capacity. And so, you know, I've always tried to, in my career, try to be involved in initiatives that bring attention to that opportunity for those contributions. And so whether it was KIPPs running conferences for our KIPPs members or running big conferences for the entire community to make them more aware of the contribution that IT can make or the impact that IT can and will make on the quality of life for individuals has always been a passion for me. And so that would be one area. And I guess the other one would be, which I try to live to, and that is just, you know, really working from a core of integrity. I mean, I think when people see that you're always trying to when you make a commitment, honor your commitment, and if for any reason you have to miss that commitment, you find a way to draw attention to it, to own up to it, and then make it right and recommit. And you know, I think those things can serve you really well in your career. And you know, I'm at the point now where you know, I'm starting to focus my attention. We've talked a lot about Generation Y and about youth. And I have to tell you, interesting enough, the area that I'm, you know, saying, well, maybe as I get ready for retirement and thinking about where will I begin to contribute, one of the areas that I have tremendous passion for is for seniors, maybe because I will be one. But, you know, when you think about seniors in our community, increasingly in North America, and it might not be true in all of Canada, but certainly in Alberta, boy, I'll tell you, trying to find healthcare workers and people that care for seniors in seniors' residences and homes, that's becoming a huge challenge. And, you know, these are, you know, our parents are people that have lived their whole lives and made a tremendous contribution. And I think we have the opportunity now with many tools, but one of them being information technology, to sit back and say, why shouldn't we be giving our seniors at whatever age they are every possibility they possibly could have to continue to contribute in vital ways to society? And I think, you know, we're a little short-sighted. I think we don't mean to, but through the best of intentions, when we lock them up to protect them and keep them safe and keep their health, we almost we almost limit their ability to continue to contribute in any way that they possibly can. And I think technology could have a tremendous role to play in seeing a future of possibilities for our parents, so that they can continue to contribute to society to the level that they can. So that's an area that I have a lot of passion for now.
Well, Kevin, we're near the close of the interview, and you always end with sort of one final question, and that is, if you were doing this interview, what questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers?
Well, I don't know if I'd have the answers, but you know, probably I think an important question is, how should we be inspiring youth to consider entry positions in information technology, information management-related fields? I really believe the tremendous diversity that exists in our industry to engage youth on pretty much any level is there. And I guess the way I would go about answering that question, or trying to maybe not answer it, but to demonstrate it, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, Stephen, is, you know, when I think of the Canadian military, or the U.S. military, when they can run commercials that could cause young people to actually consider a field, you know, and I say this in an honoring way, to consider a career in Canada's military, there should be no reason why the information technology or field, you know, with the help of corporations and government, could not run inspiring commercials to attract youth to a career, to either to a career or at least to entry-level jobs that might lead to a career at some point in the future in creating wealth for our country. So that's an area that I think a question that I would ask. Another question that I might ask would be, I'm just really creating a real vision for the enabling role of information technology. How do we go about creating a vision for the enabling role of information technology across all industries, all organizations? And again, maybe that's part of that visioning. I think those are questions that I'd like to see organizations like KIPS attempt to answer, or even to facilitate answers to, because, again, I think it is a great industry we're calling people to. It's a well-paying industry. It's a tremendous rewarding industry, and a way to really impact the quality of life of our citizens. So I think, you know, a vision around that role of IT is important. And then I guess just, my third one would be that whole area for seniors, as I said. I've already talked to that. I think we've spent a lot of time talking about youth, and it's appropriate we do so. They are our future. But when I think about the number of people that are going to be exiting the workforce as we know it today, that is, and entering early years of retirement, and then progressing obviously to years where they're maybe not as don't have the freedom and the independence they once might have had, I think there's a huge opportunity for information technology to contribute to the quality of life for people as they near the end of their lifespan, but have just such a vast degree of experience and knowledge to share and to capture. And I think we haven't even begun to tap how we might contribute to the quality of life for those individuals. And that would be a great challenge, I think, for us as a society.
Well, Kevin, it's been a real pleasure talking with you today, because you bring this tremendous insight and tremendous wisdom and experience. So we appreciate you coming in to share this with the audience, and we'll continue to follow your innovative work and your leadership roles, both nationally and internationally, with keen interest.
Stephen, I appreciate that very much, and it was a privilege to talk to you today.